Widows is not your everyday heist movie, even though it might start like one. After a botched robbery leaves several men dead, the criminals they robbed are out to track down the money, leaving their wives to clean up the mess.
But director Steve McQueen and his co-screenwriter Gone Girl's Gillian Flynn spin the caper that follows into something far more interesting. The cast includes Viola Davis, Daniel Kaluuya, Michelle Rodriguez, Brian Tyree Henry, and Liam Neeson. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. Today we're talking about the thrilling, genre-defying Widows. With us here in the studio is the host of All Things Considered, Audie Cornish. Hi, Audie.
Hey there.
And also joining us, this is very exciting, also joining us is Christina Tucker of the Unfriendly Black Hotties podcast. Hi, Christina.
Hello, friends.
We are so excited to have both of you here with me and Stephen to talk about Widows. Now, I want to say first, before we get into this, a little bit more plot setup to kind of explain. There are so many moving parts in this. We didn't even mention Colin Farrell and Robert Duvall. What's going on here is basically, as we said, Liam Neeson is Viola Davis's husband. He's a robber. He's a crook. Robbery goes wrong. All the men are gone. And now all the women have to make good on the debt that they owed to a guy named Jamal, who's played by Brian Tyree Henry, who's running for alderman. And he's running against Colin Farrell, who plays the son in a big white Chicago political family. And so what you basically have is like both a political story, because Brian Tyree Henry is running for alderman, but to finance his alderman campaign, he needs this money that he wants to get back from Viola Davis. So Viola Davis gathers up this group of women. We also didn't even mention Elizabeth Debicki, Cynthia Erivo. There is a whole group of women, Carrie Coon, who kind of is one of the women but doesn't get involved in the heist, which is a whole thing. There's so much going on in this movie. But Audie, I want to talk to you first. You have talked to both Viola Davis and Steve McQueen about this movie. How do you feel about it? I saw it in Toronto, and I loved it so much when I saw it in Toronto.
I loved it, too. And as you said, there is a lot going on. But the thing is, I personally think all the threads come together quite well. I do think that this is a movie made by the man who brought you Shame, you know, about sex addiction and hunger, you know, and 12 Years a Slave. Okay, so he brings that eye to things, and there is a kind of cynicism to the film. It's not Ocean's 8.
No.
Right. It's the movie Ocean's 8 would be if it cared about the internal lives of its characters.
Sure.
And so it's not about just wearing a pretty dress and walking away unscathed. It basically says if you tried to do something violent, if you tried to enter a rough and tumble and violent world, how would you change? How would you survive it? And it's also thrilling. I felt like through many parts of it, I wasn't quite sure where it was going to go next. I think Altman is kind of the name that was in the back of my head as well, in terms of one of those films that you pass through different worlds from scene to scene and different people, and you feel like you're kind of in the middle of one conversation and then you pass through to another conversation. It was done really elegantly. From both of them, the director and the star, I got the sense that they felt like they were taking a risk in a way. Even though they are doing something that Hollywood finds very easy to do, the heist film, I think they felt a kind of pressure that being people of color and maybe not being thought of in this kind of genre work, would they really be given a chance? And the box office for it has not been fantastic out of the gate. And so maybe they were right to be concerned. But it was fun. It's a fun movie.
Yeah, this is one. When I saw it in Toronto, what I said about it was, I wouldn't be surprised if it was nominated for Best Picture. And I wouldn't be surprised if it made $300 million. I feel like either one of those things, or both theoretically, could have been its future. But I think it's very rare to have both of those things happen, like to have a genre movie like this get its full due as a good film, which I do think has happened, but then to also have it be appreciated for how fun it is. I think when I got to the end of this movie, the word that I used was satisfying. And I actually talked to somebody else who said exactly the same thing when they saw it on Twitter. It is a satisfying experience. And I think Viola Davis is so good in it. And there are so few films, particularly like an action heist type film, that give this kind of role to a woman who is her age and gender and race and particular complexion. There are not a ton of those roles out there. And she's so good in it. Oh, my gosh.
The other thing is everyone's good in it. Like, I feel like there should be a movie that's called Daniel Kaluuya's Eyes.
Yes.
Like, what? Are they evil? Are they good? I don't know. Just tell me what the movie is. I'll just watch that movie with him staring into my soul.
No,
like, he's an incredible villain.
Oh, he was so good.
And Colin Farrell, who I kind of forget about every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And then he turns in a performance that makes you just think like, oh, right, that guy is good at things. It sort of worked.
All right, Christina, tell me what you thought of Widows.
Full disclosure, I am a scaredy cat. I don't love a violent film. So I did what I always do when I go to see a movie that is rated R. I checked the parent's guide on IMDb.
Nice.
To just see where the violence would be. Mm-hmm. And what I really kind of took away from it was that, like, yes, it was kind of violent. It wasn't as violent as I thought it would be necessarily, but all of the violence in the film was so well done in that it both was something that felt either necessary for the characters to do, but also that there was this kind of not everyday quotidian, like, yep, this is just what we do. This is how things are done. These are the choices that we're making to be the people that we are. It was just a really interesting exploration as to like what violence can do to the characters in those films. And yeah, it was satisfying. Like, there was still the whooping in my theater towards the end, you know, that experience that I love having in a movie.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I had such a good time.
And I think it's so thoughtful about that violence in the same way that it's kind of thoughtful about evil. One of the things that I said when I reviewed it is like, Daniel Kaluuya is kind of the most immediately menacing person in the movie. He's very scary in it. Those same eyes that turn on you, you know, when he's sweet, also turn on you when he's vicious. But it's clear that, like, those guys, and particularly Brian Tyree Henry, talks about trying to run for alderman against this established white political family. And it's like, he sort of presents basically an argument that amounts to, what am I supposed to do?
Right.
I mean, yeah, you understand there's like a way in which he is not necessarily the most evil force in the movie, even though he's the one who comes and menaces Viola Davis and kind of starts the whole thing off. What do you think, Stephen?
I loved it. It's so interesting. At one point in this film, I kind of took my brain out of the movie for a second and just thought, man, this movie's bleak. This is tough. Like, there are no heroes in this movie. There are all just like variations on villainy. And yet it's bleak, but it's super fun. There are no heroes. And yet I rooted for people. I found myself like kind of the edge of the seat during the heisty stuff. The scene that you can, several of you have already alluded to, of Daniel Kaluuya just looking closely at someone, getting his face underneath the guy's face. The shot is in the trailer. Mm-hmm. And if you see the shot in the trailer, you're like, why am I scared of Daniel Kaluuya? I love that guy. But he's, if anything, even scarier than the trailer would have you believe.
Yeah.
My one quibble with this movie is I felt like the ending left kind of enough loose ends for a sequel in a way that made it feel a little unfinished to me. Mm-hmm. As satisfying as I felt the film was as a whole, I was left a tiny bit flat by the ending, which I, you know, I'm not going to give anything away, but I will say this movie cared a little bit more about like the race for Ward 18 alderman than I did. And I felt like it was more interested in tying that up than in tying up like how everything really gets resolved in terms of this major, major move that all these people have made in their
right.
lives.
If you want a movie where you're going to watch a person look at blueprints and point in various directions. If you want a movie in which a hacker will tippity-tap on their machine and point at blue screens, this is probably not the film for you.
Yeah, there's some of that. There's some blueprints.
There's a little bit of blueprint.
But it's funny. I wrote about the blueprint in my notes because they basically wave it around and they're like, where is that? Go find where that is.
Yeah.
The blueprint is almost a MacGuffin.
The blueprint is like people have barely any interest in. As soon as they get the address, they're basically done. I want to point out one performance, and that's Elizabeth Debicki.
Yeah.
Steve McQueen said she's like 6'4".
Yeah.
She towers over.
She looks it in the film. And she goes through the greatest transition of any of the characters in what is the underlying thesis of the movie in terms of somebody coming into their own power. Mm-hmm. She starts out with somebody who's essentially abused by most people in her life, including her husband / boyfriend who had been killed at the start of the movie, and her own mother. And
Jackie Weaver.
Jackie Weaver.
Who's also in this movie.
But essentially, she reaches a point where she just kind of stops wanting to be abused and stops wanting to be told that she can't accomplish something, and she does. And it's a performance that you really, it is like totally one of the sparks of the film, and I'm sure people will be talking about it later on, so people keep an eye out for her. She's got like Vogue ingenue trend piece written all over her. Like, I feel like I'm going to be seeing a lot more of her being talked about.
All the women have kind of different attitudes about getting involved in this. Mm-hmm. One of the things I like is that Cynthia Erivo, who plays a woman who isn't originally one of the widows, right, but gets involved in the heist later, is that her attitude toward it seems kind of more matter of fact to me. It seems more just like, well, this is one of the many things that you sometimes do as part of life, which is a strangely blasé attitude toward a heist, but I still found her very fun to watch. I mean, I found it to be a very entertaining movie. Christina, how did you feel about the Viola Davis character?
I loved her dearly. You know, I love a severe woman, let's be honest. Any kind of woman in a well-sheathed blazer jacket, a lot of great jewelry, I'm very here for it. She was very matter-of-fact and, in a way, just kind of, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to be leading this. Please do not cross me. And if you do, there will be consequences. I want her to do that all the time, forever.
Right.
I could watch
and the consequences
a movie of her
weren't,
just
I'll
that.
Slap you or something like that. The consequences are, we're all
going to
die.
So, we're going
you know,
to
like
die.
She laid it out on the table about what the troubles would be.
And no one ugly cries like Viola. Like, wow, that woman can really perform grief in a way that feels so immediate and so real. She's phenomenal.
I love the fact that that character is not always likable to me. She's sort of, especially with the Elizabeth Debicki character, she can be very dismissive. And I think they have a relationship that has an element of guidance, but also an element of tension and resentment. And also Viola Davis being like, why do I have to drag this sometimes kind of dopey seeming woman through this? Like, this is not necessarily the team she would recruit for this heist that she discovers she has to pull
and
off.
I loved that. Like, I loved that there was that feeling, you know, when you're in a heist movie, the idea that like, okay, now we're all going to be buddies and do our cool criming. And she was like, nope, this is not what's happening here. We don't have to speak after this. We will not speak again.
Yep.
We're getting this done, and then it's over. This is not friendship time.
Yeah.
One thing Steve McQueen said, the director, was that when he first came to Hollywood, you know, for Shame and is kind of doing the rounds and everything, he'd see someone at a dinner and think, oh, why isn't that woman doing more? Or like, that woman seems like a great act. She should be doing more. And he said this is when he sort of got it into his mind that eventually he wanted to do a woman-led picture. He grew up watching the UK miniseries Widows, which is the origin of this story. And I think he did accomplish that. Like, he kind of jammed in as many female voices and characters as he could. And for someone like me who has watched his movies in the past and thought, I wish women did have a stronger presence, and it, like, there was no room for that in Hunger, you know, which was about this, like, IRA prisoner. Mm-hmm. There was no room for that in Shame, which was about a male sex addict. And in 12 Years a Slave, like, wasn't my fave, you know? And I know I'm happy for Lupita Nyong'o, it turned into a star, but that was rough viewing, I think, as a black woman, and for women characters in general, I did not think that was a win. So for him to come out of the gate and do something like this, for me, felt, I was genuinely surprised, and it was a happy surprise.
It was really cool to me to see that Steve McQueen included in this Michelle Rodriguez, who, unlike Viola Davis and unlike some of these other actresses, does have a history in genre movies like this where there's shooting and driving and all that stuff. And I liked seeing her have that opportunity. So I like the fact that here Steve McQueen drew from a lot of different kind of women who had a bunch of different kinds of careers in casting.
And who are still really good actors. I mean, you clearly, I thought that Michelle Rodriguez performance, as restrained as it is, really, really worked as more than just like, I think of her as like a steely badass in Fast and the Furious.
Yes, because she's usually punching her and driving her way through those films.
Right.
And here he does, he takes her and has her not do those things.
It is a more coiled performance. I think she's terrific.
I mean, the thing to remember about McQueen is that he's a visual artist, like a Turner Prize winning award-winning visual artist. Yeah. If he wasn't being an Oscar-winning director, he would just be like off doing his art installations out of Amsterdam. The visuals of it are quite specific. He's a director with such a specific eye, and I really enjoy it. There's a lovely extended scene where the politician is having an argument with his staffer in the car. The entire scene is shot from outside the car, looking in, I think, on the driver, but you
kind of off to the side,
and the neighborhood changes as they're arguing about the neighborhood and what they think of it. If you pulled any one of those frames, it would be an incredible photo. I have one more thing I want to ask you guys about, because we're saying such great things about this movie, is it seems like there is a little bit of a disconnect between what critics think, which is a lot of positive conversation and saying, why aren't there more movies like this, and how it's actually performing right now at the box office. It's not like it opened at number one or something like that, or even number two, or even number three, I think. And are there aspects of the movie that you think about now that would make it less appealing to people?
There aren't, to me. And I actually was very surprised by that, because when I first saw it, my take on it was it had so many different things going for it. It had people who had credibility established in action movies. It also had great actors. It seemed like it was going to be super fun. And I wonder whether the fact that McQueen is more of kind of a prestige director and the fact that Viola Davis is more of like a prestige actress, I wonder if people thought, particularly as it started to get these reviews that were very positive about how thoughtful it is, if people didn't understand that it was also fun to see, that it was like also had lots of heisty stuff.
Yeah, I'm also wondering about the marketing of it. Like, I use my parents as like the just general marketing tool, because they're the only people I know who still like sit down and watch TV and look at commercials.
Right.
And I mentioned that I was seeing it, and they were both like, oh, I haven't heard about that. And I was like, oh, really? You haven't heard about this Widows movie with Steve McQueen, Viola Davis? Like, big names.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't really seen, aside from like, you know, the Twitter conversations from critics and stuff, that it's been a great film, but I haven't really seen a lot of like big marketing pushes around it. So I'm wondering if that has any, because I don't think anything in the film is something that you wouldn't want to see. It's all good and it's all fun.
Yeah. And if you do get a chance to see Widows, which I think we would all recommend, come and tell us what you think of it. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. When we come back, it will be time to talk about what's making us happy this week. So come right back.
Support for this program and the following message come from WordPress.com. Whether you want a website that's simple yet effective, or one that's packed with features, WordPress can help you build it. Choose from hundreds of themes that fit your style, then grow your following and engage with customers with built-in social media tools and marketing plugins. Plans include a custom domain. Get 15% off any new plan purchase today at WordPress.com/happyhour. Support for this podcast and the following message come from Little Passports, the award-winning subscription service that brings a world of discovery to your front door every month. With the Early Explorer subscription, each month's package arrives full of activities like uncovering fossils from around the world, fun souvenirs like ancient Greek coins, and hands-on games like Coloring the Cosmos, all curated for their curious minds. Learn more about their holiday offers at littlepassports.com/popculture.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What is making us happy this week? Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week?
A couple weeks ago, my daughter came home from a thrift store excursion with an armload of Saw DVDs. So imagine my surprise when I discovered that she also loves a French cartoon on Netflix called Miraculous Tales of Ladybug and Cat Noir, which is this kiddie cartoon about two crime-fighting teenagers who one has a crush on the other, but they're also secretly superheroes who fight crime together and somehow don't recognize each other even though they're identical. It is formulaic and silly and weirdly mockable, and yet also very skillfully made. And for whatever reason, my entire family, four people with four very different interests, have come together to really get a kick out of this show. And it kind of reminded me, every once in a while, I would sit and watch it and think, oh, geez, these cliches, or this trope that they kind of just hammer episode after episode after episode, or this villain who's very one note. And I think, I don't know if this is as good as it could be. And then I thought, you know what? When I was a kid, I loved a TV show called The Wacky Races, which was this this very formulaic show. And I realized, like, I love that show. I attach to that show because it's in my childhood. And seeing my daughter in particular, knowing that she will attach to this very silly show in the same way, felt like Circle of Life. But also, man, as a family, we're getting a kick out of this silly-ass cartoon. Two seasons of it are on Netflix. If you've got kids, it's very, very fun. I had never heard of it, but of course found that it naturally has a very devoted fan base. Mm-hmm. It is called Miraculous: Tales of Ladybug and Cat Noir.
Oh, thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Sounds wonderful. Audie Cornish, what is making you happy this week?
Two things. One is Missy Elliott and Mariah Carey being nominated to the Songwriters Hall of Fame. I'm a big Missy Elliott fan. We're heading into Christmas. As we know, Mariah penned one of the great, if not the only, truly modern Christmas song, which is about to hit you in your earbuds wherever you go for the next 5 weeks, All I Want for Christmas, which leads to the second thing, which is the hashtag Justice for Glitter, which... was a, like, Mariah Carey super fan social media effort to kind of revive her worst-selling album and her, I think it was, like, her personal bottom in terms of tabloid, yeah, career-wise for the movie Glitter, which came out, I think, in 2001. Well, over the weekend, it hit number one on the iTunes charts, even though you can't get it on streaming. It was like on word of mouth only. And honestly, I just think that kind of thing is funny. So hashtag justice for glitter. Me and Mariah go back like babies and pacifiers.
Wow. Well done.
Oh, Audie.
I had wonderful. A lot of thoughts on that.
Thank you so much, Audie. Christina, what is making you happy this week?
The podcast Who Weekly has made me happy for many weeks now, and it is a podcast hosted by Bobby Finger and Lindsay Weber, and it is about, as they say, everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. They are excellent in deciding who are the who's of celebritydom and who are the them's of celebritydom. I've learned so much nonsense information from this podcast. In fact, Scarlett Johansson opened a popcorn store in Paris. Who knew?
I didn't know that.
There you go. They have episodes on Tuesdays that are kind of like the news of the week as such. And then they have a call-in episode where folks of the show call in and ask, you know, what is Vanessa Hudgens doing in this Christmas movie? Can we talk about that? They're both very funny. And the show is also excellent because they are both journalists, so they're very good at talking about why the things that these who celebrities do work in the way that they work, why the marketing that they do works. They have an entire dedicated segment to the idea of SponCon, which is sponsored content that these celebrities do, your tummy teas, your sponsored waters. They have an entire segment dedicated to Rita Ora, which includes the line, tens of people want to know all about the number one who. It's just... a really delightful podcast, and they have such great chemistry, and I've learned so much about people that I really don't need to know about, but I think everybody should also join me in this venture.
Thank you so much, Christina Tucker. So what is making me happy this week? We are into the holiday season. It's not only a time for holiday romance TV movies. It's also a time for holiday television baking shows.
Oh.
So I want to give my shout this week to the Food Network double shot of Holiday Baking Championship and Christmas Cookie Challenge. Now, your Holiday Baking Championships, your basic baking competition show, people are tasked with things like, you know, make a cake that's based on a flavor that you might find in a thing of candy canes and all this other stuff. That one, you'll find Duff Goldman among the judges if you're a fan of Ace of Cakes. He's a lot of fun. The other one is Christmas Cookie Challenge, where people are, you know, you might...
I feel like I know what that's about.
You feel like you know what that's about, right? They have to make delicious and good-looking displays of Christmas cookies. That one, among the judges, you got your Ree Drummond, your pioneer woman. Mm-hmm. I feel that when the season is setting in and you really, truly need that turn off your brain moment, there's nothing quite like seeing a bunch of people be like, how do I make cookies, but with eggnog, but also I have to make it in the shape of a turkey? Like, that is fun. That is fun. I enjoy it. Holiday Baking Championship and Christmas Cookie Challenge. And I have one other thing I want to mention really quick, which is I am going to be participating in a holiday special, which is taking place live, a holiday live event for my friends at the podcast Pitch. And you can come and see a bunch of, there will be music, there will be games. I am the party game bringer to this holiday event. It's going to be at Caveat in Manhattan on December 2nd. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Linda Holmes. You can find Stephen at I Dislike Stephen. You can find Audie at NPR Audie. And you can find Christina at C_GraceT. You can find our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy. Our producer, Vincent Accavino, at V Accavino. And our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which you are bobbing your head to right now. So thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for listening. If you have a chance and you're so inclined, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts. That will help more folks to find the show. We will see you all right back here next week.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, host of the TED Radio Hour. And this week, we're going to explore just what it takes to speak up. Because whether it's asking for a raise or asking for equality, it requires courage to take that crucial step to say something. You can find the TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.